This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's that time, Prior Faithful. Time to discuss everything going on with the Padres. We've gathered the entire 97.3 The Fan crew together to bring you the most in-depth discussion on the Friars in our weekly Padres Roundtable, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Here's your host, Ben Higgins.
All right, I think we're on. We're just kind of settling in here to the Padres Roundtable presented by Roundtable Pizza. We've got most of the crew in today.
Did everybody hear me say we should all have upside-down logos on our microphones?
Yeah. Yeah, this is going to be probably the gnarliest of our roundtables so far this season. Coming off the three-game sweep by the Los Angeles Angels, let's introduce the cast of characters. I'll start with Annie Heilbrun from Annie and Elston. Good morning, Annie.
Good morning, Woo! Ben. How good are morning, you? Everyone.
We've
great.
Got Braden Soprenant sitting in again as well. You're a producer. Hello, Braden.
I'm doing well. Thank you.
My co-host, Stephen Woods, sitting in the middle there.
Just here so I don't get fined.
Next to Craig Elston from Annie and Elston.
Yeah. Yeah. I am here, in fact.
And Chris Zello from Gwyn and Chris. No Gwyn today. We're not sure. I think Tony's just too despondent after what happened the last
smart.
3 days.
I really wanted to ask Tony Gwynn Jr. about his bomb in Cooperstown. I've been waiting to talk to him about it.
Did you ever get to see the actual
video? I saw it actually happen.
I saw the video. It looked like pitched down and in, and he just...
Jose Contreras was actually a one-time All-Star 100%. In Major League Baseball.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a legit pitcher.
Fastball.
Although Braden Soprenant and I told him about that last night, and he goes, "Yes, well, Everett Cabrera once made an All-Star team."
That's true.
He was
That's
trying
true.
To put down Jose Contreras.
Oh, it was not. Nice.
Wasn't nice.
That's the context.
The legit
context.
Pitcher.
It's called context.
Well, we've certainly seen some bad baseball in the last few days from the San Diego Padres, but let's try to put our finger on the reason why they are playing the bad baseball, because there's a few different options out there. And one thing that Mike Shildt has said all year long, he wants his team to have an aggressive identity. Go out, take those extra bases, and be an aggressive team. He'd rather them make mistakes by being too aggressive than too passive. And I think we can all agree, no one likes a team that doesn't take any chances. If you're never getting thrown out on the base paths, you're probably not trying hard enough. However, we have seen a string of base running mistakes, punctuated by Luis Arraez in the first inning, running the Padres out of a potentially big inning in the series finale against the Angels. So, Chris, I'll start with you today. Are the Padres too aggressive on the base paths? Do they need to back it off a little bit and stop running themselves out of potential big innings?
Yes, on the surface, but beneath the surface, I don't think so. I think they've got to keep trying and pushing the envelope. They got to make some better decisions. I think the worst decision, mean, Luis Arraez, obviously it wasn't a good decision. He got thrown out by quite a bit. Ha-Seong Kim going to third base on a leadoff double the other night. Wasn't really thrilled with that decision. But I think they're at least trying to make some things happen. The one that's bothered me the most was sending Profar home the other night with Manny coming up and what would have been second and third in the tying and go-ahead runs on base. I think you got to be smart aggressive. I don't think they've been smart aggressive. So they got to figure out a way to do it with a little more intelligence. But you're still going to make some outs. But some of these, you're losing one-run ball games, Ben. So it's coming back to get them for sure.
Craig, does Mike Shildt need to back off the aggression talk for his team just so they feel comfortable not going from time to time?
I don't care what he says in terms of the talk. What I want to see is them be smart base runners. And I'll just underline what Chris said. I mean, the stats bear it out, too. We've run into five more outs than we've created on the bases this year, according to Baseball References base running numbers. We are making visibly, obviously dumb decisions that I think materially impacted the last series, because as we've seen, when this team grabs a lead, then all of a sudden it's Johnny Feelgood and things just tend to run well, and it goes the other way for this team. I really did feel that by taking almost the Angels for granted, in the sense that, like, oh, we can just run anywhere, like it's a little league team, they're gonna fumble the ball around and we're gonna get the extra base. No, they made all the very routine plays, and that kind of put a damper on what San Diego could do.
Well, it's when you are trying to win with a lower payroll, it's not impossible, but you do have to win sometimes on the margins, and base running can be one of those margins that are the difference between a one-run win and a one-run loss.
Yeah, I think, at any level, if the play's in front of you, it's right in front. These are the ones that killed me, that all these plays are right in front of them. I mean, these guys are good baseball players. They're smart baseball players. They've been playing the game a long time. When it's right in front of you, Luis Arraez, when it's right in front of you, Ha-Sung Kim, situational awareness. If the ball skirts away from the catcher and you're trying to get to second base and you get thrown out, I got no problem with that, man. You're trying to get in a scoring position. That's aggression to me. This looks like lately guys that are pressing and trying to make things happen when in reality you don't really have to. You know, you have to know who's coming up behind you, the situation of the game. It's first inning. There's no reason you need to be at third base if you're Luis Arraez. None whatsoever. So those are the ones, and you can feel it suck the air. It certainly sucked the air out of me last night, laying in bed. The first inning, just going, all right. So that's how this one's going to be. It's just really frustrating to watch.
For Annie and Braden, and we've talked to enough of the players. I think fans sometimes say a team that's bad at base running, well, they just get a bunch of dumb players who don't know baseball. That's not the case. I mean, these aren't dumb ball players who don't know what they're doing. So why, Annie, would otherwise fairly smart baseball players be making so many mistakes on the base paths?
I think it's trying to get that win. And when you don't have the offense going like you want to, you're not – they like to talk about creating opportunities. The more opportunities you're creating, the more you'll be able to cash in on them. And so some of them aren't going to work out, but you're going to be able to cash in on the other ones. And they just haven't been able to do that because their offense hasn't been clicking. So you're still wanting to get that aggressiveness and have that going, but it's just been a little tougher to stomach when they're running into those outs and then there's not really enough offense behind them to make up for it. So I like the fact that they're aggressive. I think, yes, they absolutely have to be smart about it. I like that they don't play scared. As players, I've talked to them about this, and they will bring up managers who haven't let them play this way. Yeah. And they love that they are allowed to play this way, that they're given the green light to play this way and to use their instincts and play smart and build the kind of player that when you get into a playoff run, hopefully, you know how to take those few inches, you know what I mean, to get a win. So they love that style of it. I'm sure they're being talked to about running into the outs, but I think a lot of this is what you guys were talking about, just not being able to gather enough offense to make up for those blunders either.
Well, the number you laid out, Craig, is it's clearly not working, right? If you're running into more outs than you're creating. I mean, my kids, if I left them to their own devices, would eat pizza and ice cream for dinner every single night. I can't let them do it. As a good parent, I cannot let them do it. I have to put my foot down at some point and say, enough, enough's enough. I gave you a shot. Now we have to rein it back in a little bit, because this team has shown the ability to string hits together. And, you know, no one's going to be mad at Ha-Sung Kim if he stops at second on a double. No one. No one's going to be mad at Luis Arraez if he stops at second. He's in scoring position. Nobody out. Big guy's coming up. No one. There's not a person in the family. He probably should have taken three there. No. No chance. You're in scoring position. It's guys trying to do too much to make up for the lack of maybe some other things that have not been happening.
Braden Woods brought up the word pressing. We heard that a lot last year as well, especially later in the summer when they were trying to make things happen. Do you see the base running blunders as a sign of pressing from the San Diego Padres?
Maybe a little bit, but, you know, to me, and, you know, I obviously with my ties to USD Baseball, being a part of their group, I get a lot of teaching points from Brock Ungerich, who learned from one of the best. And one that he uses all the time that I now use as a coach, you know, for a different sport, is if you're going to fail aggressively. And I kind of love that philosophy of letting kids go out there and take some chances. Go take some chances. You might make a really big play. You might make a really big moment in the game. But I do think there's a difference between being aggressive and being reckless. And I think they're kind of going through that experiment right now. I mean, I could do the same thing in football where I tell a defensive back, you know, I want you to jump that out route. Like, go if you think you got it, jump it.
Go get it.
But the problem is if he jumps it and he misses, that receiver is going to take it about 80 yards down the field until the safety tackles him.
Yep.
And so when you come off the field after, it's like you can't get mad at the guy because he did exactly what you said. He was being aggressive. I think eventually it will start paying off for them. I just think they're in the mindset right now of trying to figure out different situations where it works and where it doesn't work during this time. And Annie brought up the whole notion of, like, not a lot of managers let their guys play like this. I mean, I don't think Bob Melvin let his guys play like this, if I'm, you know, not mistaken, as well as Jace Tingler go through the list. So maybe it's them trying to figure out, maybe I can make it on this play or maybe not. I think they're going to learn throughout the year. The thing is with Padres fans and a lot of the Padres and with the Padres themselves, you just can't have this like be the learning thing until August, and then all of a sudden you're 10, 15 games out of
four. I would institute a red light for Ha-Sung Kim, however, because I really don't think he's a very smart base runner. I don't care for the word dumb, which was used earlier, but I don't think Ha-Sung Kim is an intelligent base runner.
We'll say he's savvy. He's not a savvy base
runner. I don't even know that he's aggressive. Reckless. He's way more reckless than he is aggressive. So
his instincts aren't terrific.
I don't think so. I really don't think so. Also, so I think a red light might be in store for at least him.
They do have a third base coach. And yeah, he sent Profar, but he put his hands up for a rise.
He put his hands up for a rise.
Maybe there's some kind of, maybe that's being talked about in meetings as well, you know, making sure that we're seeing signs. And I'm sure he too, you know, they've looked over that Profar one as well.
It's our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Just getting started here. And I would now want to get to what I think is a much bigger reason why the Padres are a game under 500. And it's not the base running. That's a small reason. The lack of power, I think, right now is a critical issue for the Padres. Average, they're doing great. Top of the league, on base percentage, fantastic. Slugging, more in the middle. Isolated power, though, near the bottom of the pack in Major League Baseball. Craig, you're kind of nodding over there. Is there a strategic, is there a structural issue that the San Diego Padres need to change? They need to swing for the fences more, essentially, to become a more productive offense.
We replaced a lot of players whose primary strengths were walks and power with the offset of strikeouts, and we replaced them with players that do not have power and don't walk as much but hit a lot more line drives and hit for a higher average. That's the culture shift that was instituted in this roster. If you want to say it's because Schilt wanted this kind of team, or AJ thought this was a great counter strategy, or if you want to say it's less expensive to get line drive hitters than it is to get power hitters, you can look at it either way. But there's no strategic change that's going to make Luis Arraez hit 25 homers this year instead of five. Like, we've got a team with very little power.
When it's working, it's very aesthetically pleasing. It's good for fans. You see these rallies, like the 11-hit inning they had last Friday against the Kansas City Royals. Chris, I've heard you talk about how fun it is to see a team that puts the ball in play, hits line drives. But the sabermetric view of baseball would be that you're looking for guys with a higher OPS, that power does matter. Are we seeing some of the negative consequences to AJ Preller's roster construction?
Who's
now
the cleanup hitter for the Padres most nights, right now? Jerks and Profar. Really not a 30 home run hitter. I think 20s is high, and he hasn't really been very close to that, you know, in the recent years. The other thing I would say, and I can't, it's hard to put it on Manny, especially when he's, you know, limping around now today. But if he had 16 home runs instead of six, they would probably have moved up quite a bit on that power number alone. I mean, he's your power, and he's not producing right now. That's a lot of pressure to put on one guy. But I think he can still be successful with doubles and triples in this day and age, but you got to have a lot of them.
Woods, I think it frustrates people sometimes when the nerds are kind of right, when they tell you that you can't be successful in modern baseball without at least a good deal of power behind some of those numbers, and we're kind of seeing that here.
Yeah, I mean, I love home runs. Getting one or more runs on one swing as opposed to four swings is really, really a good way to do it. But it also comes with its consequences, like strikeouts. Power's kind of down around Major League Baseball right now.
It's
down.
Very much.
There's We always talk about, we got to go out and find a bat. And I lay in bed at night and rack my brain of who is a guy with undeniable power that will come to Petco Park this year with these balls and everything else that factors into it and, you know, is good for 40 home runs.
Oh, he's already been here. His name was Aaron Judge.
and Juan Soto also
clearly,
has, you know, 35.
Tony Gwynn Jr. He just hit a home run.
Tony Gwynn Jr. I'm not opposed to giving him a look. But it is certainly, and like I said on the air today, it's no surprise that in the playoffs, when the cream of the crop teams are there with their cream of the crop pitchers, that the teams that are able to hit for more power usually win a lot more games. It's not a myth. It's actual. The numbers are there that show it. And right now we're missing that a little bit. Can still win ball games. Absolutely can still win ball games. Can still outslug teams, certainly. But that's why today, you know, we're talking about one more power bat. Who is he? Where does he exist? What does he cost? And will he perform here is the billion-dollar question.
Yeah, Brandon, we talked about Pete Alonso, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. If the Blue Jays do decide to sell, are the Padres a power bat away? Does that make a big difference?
I think they definitely need a power bat. I mean, I said this last week on the roundtable. I said the slug's low and all the power's low, and they're a line drive hitting team. But you go through the roster, they built a roster with no power hitters. I mean, we talked about it last week again with Xander Bogaerts and Manny Machado are line drive hitters. Yep. They've always been. And when they hit the ball out, it's because they crush it. And they hit the ball really hard. I think Fernando Tatis Jr. could be a power hitter when he's 28, but he's not at 25. And you go down the list, a lot of line drive bats. So they definitely need at least one big bopper. And I agree with what Craig said last week as well. You can have a team with a bunch of line drive hitters, but you at least need one guy that has some pop. I think they thought Camposano was going to have a little pop, and then, you know, he snapped his 0 for 24, whatever it was, last night. He hasn't been hitting very well. But I don't necessarily know if it's one power bat away. I mean, we talked about it yesterday on Andy Nelson. They really need, like, five things.
They do.
They need, like, two bullpen pieces. They need two starters, and they need a power bat.
Two catchers.
Who doesn't need that at the trade deadline?
Right.
They also need to keep that under $10 million.
Right,
got to go to Costco.
Right,
good luck.
So you're looking at guys like if you just want to fill that list out, it's like, you know, let's shoot for the stars. Miller and Ursig from the A's,
sure,
don't cost a lot of money. Or just talking money, right? Then you got to think, well, maybe do we want to bring back Brent Rooker, or do we want to bring back Tommy Pham? I mean, those are kind of in your budget that are power hitters, right? Talk about the Garrett Crochet thing that might fill another spot for a starter. Again, what's his payroll? Very small. Lizardo's your highest paid guy, $2.5 million with what it would be prorated by the time you trade. You bring in those five guys, are you a World Series caliber team? I don't know.
I don't know.
Are you
either willing
to get rid of everybody in your farm system to make that happen?
Well, let's get into more trade talk specifically. And before we talk about Garrett Crochet and those rumors, Annie, one question that we were discussing on the show was whether a team needs to prove something before you're willing to start trading top prospects to improve it. Because if you're only improving a slightly under 500 team to make them a slightly above 500 team, is that worth sacrificing potential future stars, even if it does win you two or three more games? How much do we need to see from these Padres before you'll feel good about AJ Preller actually going and dangling some of the top prospects in the system again?
I mean, I tend to think make the team better now. Whatever that means for the prospects, prospects are prospects to me. While they can come up and be fantastic, and I do understand the necessity to build from within, and the Padres do need to pivot that way if that's going to be their mentality. But for me right now, that's not their mentality. As much as they try to say that, they really are a team that has built from getting veteran pieces or pieces that are experienced and bringing them in and trying to fit it together. And if this is like your swing at the pot this year, and I think what sets it apart this year is that the rest of the National League is you know, not very good. And so how many pieces do you need for them? And what is the goal? Is it just to get in the playoffs and let's hope for some magical run? Is it to go deep in the playoffs? Because that's going to probably, you're going to need more pieces. You're going to end up going against these better teams. But just to make it in the playoffs right now, if you're a front office, you might be looking at it going, okay, we're not going to be able to fill all these spots. So what are the one or two that kind of get us where we need to get over the hump of making it, you know, a few more games over 500 than the rest of these teams circling that 500 drain right now, if that's what it's going to end up taking. So I think he goes for it because I think that's just who he is. And if you're going to go down, you're going to go down swinging your way. And I'm not saying he's going down, but that's just, I think that's his mentality. So I think that you make the moves you need to make right now.
Why wait if you know what they are, right? I mean, why burn through another like month and a half of just taking L's and just doing the word that the clubhouse doesn't like to talk about. It goes like this. It's like a ride and stuff like that. Why go through that if you already know the problem? Try to fix it now. Yeah. I mean, how many times have we seen the Padres make deadline deals and it's the whole narrative's, well, they got to gel together. They got to gel over the last 2 months. Start gelling now. Let's go.
Luis Urias gelled pretty quickly got here. And the more time you have, the better. I know the price point on those will drop. You know, or right. Maybe they'll go up. You never know. I mean, you're playing that poker match or that poker game. The longer you wait, but I'm kind of with Annie and Braden as well. I mean, you have holes that you need to identify. Just got to make sure it's the right guys, as usual. And so far, so good this year. You know, I think so. I mean, so far, so good. Give credit where credit's due. But yeah, I've said it like a mantra. He's got to do his best GMing that he's ever done, and it happens right now. And he's got a very limited budget to do so, and so. The arrow needs to hit the bullseye, like, every time.
My last thing on this, too, is I don't know that you can operate on the magical future. You know, like, right. You're operating on the sense that everything is going to be the same or better next year or the year after. Yeah. You don't know that.
You just don't.
Feels like we're in a Tim McGraw song. Just live like you were dying.
That's
like,
right.
There is no future. But, Craig, we all know how credit cards work. And if you keep borrowing and keep borrowing and keep borrowing and hoping that, you know, oh, this next deal will get me out of the hole – eventually, you get into some really bad places. Is that where A.J. Preller is headed?
Not so fast, my friends. I am here to just Gandalf it down. Thou shalt not pass before I tell you that I am 100% in alignment against this current strain of conversation.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Guess what? He already did it, guys.
Yep.
He traded four players for Dylan Cease.
Yep.
That's the biggest trade that's been made in baseball this year, except for trading four more guys to get Luis Arraez and have Miami pay his entire contract. So we've already done what you guys have advocated for. What we're now to the point of is we have cut and cut and cut below. Are we going to fire the last chamber? Are we going to get rid of Salas? Are we going to get rid of Snelling, Lesko, Major, DeVries? Because to get the five-player package, and actually, that was a pretty smart package, Braden. I liked it. But a five-player package to get to what? 85 wins? And then we tumble out? In 2020, we overshot, okay? We made two really unwise trades in retrospect, although Matt Waldron might save the Clevinger deal down the road.
Right.
But Clevinger and Nola cost this team so much that in 2021, the next year, when they needed their reserves, there was nothing to call on. 2022, we took our shot, and everyone agreed, take your shot,
100%.
Right? Didn't work out. But in 2023, when we needed our reserves, there was no one to call upon. And we had just built it up. We fired it down to get to where we are. They haven't earned it yet, baby. We need to be 8-10 games over 500 in a real playoff position. We're in the playoffs. We're a game and a half out of 11th right now. We are 2 days out of 11th place in the National League.
But isn't it crazy how it can flip? Because Yuki Matsui gets that save against the Royals, and you roll and handle business against Anaheim. We're in here going, all right, we got to go get this guy.
You could say the same thing last year when Hader gave up the bomb to Mookie Betts on Sunday Night Baseball.
So are you saving everyone in a little cabinet for use later? Like, because what's going to happen when everybody's sort of getting older? And
that's the thing. That's the thing right there.
Then we have these young players to come in and help extend the time.
You spent all that money on those guys for their prime. You can't punt on their prime years.
That's the thing.
You got to go all in for these years. And then when they're old, you're just like, you know what? It didn't work.
Are they all in? Because we're getting swept by the Rockies. We're getting swept by the Angels. Where is this franchise? I mean, we're
all
in one set.
That's a conversation the clubhouse needs to have.
But where is it? They need to prove to their top guys. They need to prove to the Erics.
They've run out of time, though. They've run because AJ has – and look, there is a corner and a room full of paint, and he's standing firmly in the corner going, I've got myself into this. I've got to try to get myself out of it. It's a weird way to, and we've been covering it. We've been here through all these weird trade deadlines and everything else. And it's really good content. It's really exciting. We get excited. Last year when we bought on the margins, we had you on that day. And we all go, okay, all right. Yeah, buying on the margins, not bad. Barlow and Rich Hill. It's terrible. It was horrible. We should have gone harder. We should have gone harder. I don't know.
It just didn't work out.
It didn't work out.
Any one of these
terrible
moves can also not work
out. But they could.
And all those prospects could also not work out either.
They don't have a ton of money to spend.
That's the thing. They don't have a ton of money.
Are we all willing to get rid of Salas?
I would just like to thank...
I don't think so.
That's the only guy I'd hang on to.
Craig, before you went to me. Because I was going to say the same thing Craig did. And I wouldn't have wanted to take on all three of these guys. So I'm just kind of sitting back. Because I really think the same that Craig does. I think this team has got to be better, what they have now. I don't think they have room to add to it. If you add a bat to this team and Bogarts comes back, where are they going to play? You're going to have the Adam Frazier problem of a few years ago.
Cadillac problems, Chris.
I don't care.
The answer is Kim is not in the lineup.
Didn't work either. I think, you know... I pick on Manny, but he's got to hit more than one home run a month.
He does.
Luis Camposano's got to get more than one hit a month. Fernando, although 4-for-4 last night, still needs to start dominating and playing the dynamic baseball he can play. I think this team, as it's constructed, if these guys play to the level they're capable, is good enough to get into the playoffs. And I don't think adding five more guys is ever going to get them to the level where they could compete with the Dodgers or the Phillies in terms of overall regular season record. So just get me into the playoffs. I think this group can do it. I agree with Craig. We've already given away too much.
You never even remember prospects' names.
That's right. I don't care who they are.
And yet he
agrees
with me.
I just know that I need some of them.
And yet he agrees with me.
I just know that I need some of them.
Just do a little of both. A little of the prospects and a little of the money. You know what I'm saying? They're not maybe not going to give everything away.
Well,
but
they can't.
Right.
You can't. I don't think you can give away Ethan Salas. I don't think you can.
I think he's the only untouchable player.
Yeah, I think he's the untouchable player, and I think everybody else is probably up for debate.
In 3 weeks, this entire thing could be different, Ben.
And we probably
could be
will.
At being sellers. I mean,
every roundtable is
they
got to
win
every single
Poor
week.
Ben.
It's like we do a roundtable for a different team every week.
It's true.
Yet it's still the San Diego Padres. They make no sense. It's our 97.3 The Fan. Yes, Padres roundtable. Sometimes we're very optimistic. Sometimes we're not. Presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. I'm gonna bring up this question. It wasn't even on my notes, but Craig made a great point. Padres have already pulled off the two biggest trades of the year.
Yeah.
And they're talking about potentially the third one with Garrett Crochet. And we're talking about maybe a fourth one to pick up a big bat as well. Finish this sentence, because we don't know the answer and what Eric Kutsenda and the Padres front office are thinking. A.J. Preller loses his job at the end of the season if, Chris...
We finish lower than 11th, which we're two games away from right now.
Craig?
If they don't make the playoffs.
If they don't make the playoffs. Yeah. Woods?
They don't make the playoffs.
Yeah, don't make the playoffs.
Annie?
I'm going to say if they don't make the playoffs and there's another combustible second half.
Another swoon.
2021, yeah, another, just
all over again.
Because
that's really
they've,
fair.
They've
that's
kind
fair.
Of they've kept him this fair. Whole time. I mean, that's my take.
All right. Good take. Yeah, I mean, they can really play better and two other teams get absolutely red hot. You don't make the playoffs. You can't necessarily make that the delineation. However, what if A.J. Preller decides to go prudent? Or what if Eric could send in Eric Gruppner and say, we're not trading any more prospects. This is your team.
You're done.
They play pretty well down the stretch. They don't make the playoffs. Is that okay for A.J. if he's playing more for the future? Do you want to keep him around?
Listen, I said this on a podcast last night, and I'll say it on the show, and I'll say it here. They should put diamond handcuffs on him right now. Like, if we believe in A.J. Preller's ability to restock the farm, that is a carrying trait that allows you to keep him here with the San Diego Padres. When he's given the ability to go hog wild, he makes crazy moves like the Matt Kemp trade. He makes crazy moves like signing Matt Carpenter, just signing guys to wild things that are way too expensive. When he is working within constraints, he's been a little bit flexible, a little bit agile, and a little bit nimble.
And maybe at his best.
Yes,
maybe
absolutely.
At his best.
So I'm here to tell you, I'm really with Annie. When you said it, I'm like, no, what you said is right. It's not just making the playoffs. It's what's going on with this team. Like, they could look at injuries as an excuse.
Sure.
If Manny was out for 2 months and Joe's out for the year, da-da-da, they go, hey, you know what? All your high-priced players were on the DL, what IL, we, you know, so et cetera. But if the thing falls apart, then it's got to go to AJ.
Why have we decided that this is it for AJ this year? I mean, when did that happen? I mean,
it's when Peter Seidler passed away. Made a big difference.
Okay.
Yeah, I never heard Peter say one bad thing about AJ. And then Eric Kinsenda at spring training, first thing he said is everybody's job is evaluated every single season. I thought that was a fairly clear message that it might be different this year if things don't go well.
It might be. Yeah, might be.
Let's talk about Garrett Crochet, because The Athletic did report this week that the Padres, with two of their star pitchers on the injured list, were actively pursuing the Chicago White Sox reliever, converted into the highest strikeouts throwing American League pitcher so far this season. Annie, do you feel like that is something that the Padres need to pursue, not knowing what the price tag could be right now for a Garrett Crochet?
Well, Garrett Sweater, as I like to call him.
Garrett Sweater.
I kind of don't get it, because he's on an innings. He's already pitched the most innings that he's pitched in his career this year.
Very cool.
And so I don't know how he necessarily, if he's going to be available to help. So maybe if you're looking at him like we want him so bad, and we want him to be a piece of our future, like our next few years, and that's worth it, and we're willing to pay the money that the money jumps to next year and all that, then I guess I could see it. But I don't exactly know how Garrett helps completely.
Doesn't Garrett Crochet? You know, we talked to Sarah Woods this morning, and he brought up that same point.
He don't be out. Something fierce.
It kind of screams disaster. Like, this could be a really bad idea, actually.
What's Fetty's contract for the White Sox? Not a lot.
It's like 2 years, maybe?
2 years, but like not a lot of money either. Yeah, He's a more interesting guy to me than Garrett Crochet. Garrett Crochet has nasty stuff, but
yes.
For what, a week? 2 weeks? 3 weeks? He's already surpassed what he's done in the past, so I don't know, man. It seems very risky to me.
Chris, could it work out in that they need someone for at least the next month or two until they get their rotation fully healthy? And after that, they could move him back to the bullpen. They could save some of his arm for later in the season, for October. If they do eventually get healthy, he's just the stopgap for the next couple of months.
No. Well, I don't know. Have you seen him in the cages? Can he hit left-handed pitching?
Because
that's what they need. In my mind, I'm probably the only. I'm not the only one. Craig doesn't think they need to make any trades. I certainly wouldn't go get Garrett Crochet. I don't think that fixes what they really need fixed. So, to me, if you can find a way to get a big bat creatively, I think that could change some things. But otherwise, the guys on this team are just going to have to perform better. I think the constraints are there, and I think they should stay on A.J. Preller. Stay the course. Try to get into the playoffs with what you have this year. As Woodsy said, if they would have won 3 of the last 5 instead of lost 4 of the last 5, we'd be sitting 2 games up on a wild card spot and we'd just be moving ahead.
If my aunt had you-know-what, she'd be my uncle.
I get it, but next week we'd be sitting here and they could be back in a wild card position and everything's fine.
Yeah.
Or we could be sitting in 12th. I don't know where we're going to be sitting. But
season, why do we react so much to four games?
I can tell you, you know what? Somebody mentioned this to me, and I thought it was really solid, and I kind of wanted to bring it today. And it describes what we're all going through. When you've got a great baseball team and you lose a couple of games, no big deal. You know you'll get back to winning here shortly. If you got a lousy baseball team and you lose a couple of games, so what? You pile them in with all the rest and you go back out. But if you've got a mediocre baseball team like we have, every loss seems to be the end of the world.
It's excruciating.
And I think that that describes the Padres and what we are all going through to perfection.
For the last few years, right? And it's not a four-game stretch, man. Like you mentioned, it's a year's problem.
It's like a 350-game stretch.
And every win is like a World Series.
Correct. Same thing on the other side.
I'm glad you brought it up, though, because 2 weeks changes everything.
It does.
It can change everything.
Yeah. In fact, I'd like to surprise you, Chris. I have a trade I'd make today. That I would make today for the San Diego Padres. I wouldn't have let Kevin Pillar leave without getting on the team bus for San Diego. A veteran who is having a resurgent career.
100%.
He can really run it down in center field. I mean, no matter what, he is one of the great center fielders and has been in baseball for a long time. He would give a big time puff to Jackson Merrill, who right now is forced to be in there every day in every way. And
by
the way,
sugar ABs.
Right. And he's killing left-handed pitching. And he is a veteran on a nothing contract that you could get for literally a single a Lake Elsinore kid could get you Kevin Pillar tomorrow off of the lousy Angels. Those are the kind of moves. Great. Let's try and fix our situation against left-handed pitching as opposed to classic Preller, top of the market.
Vladdy Jr.
Chase the glittering star, pay the absolute most.
It's fun,
like,
though,
we don't need to be up there today.
It's fun, though.
I know. Well, we already did it twice. I know. Like, what are we, on crack? Like, we
are.
Do it every day.
Yeah, it's not our fault.
A little over halfway home, just got a text from an unknown number. I think it's a St. Louis area code. It says, how about some positivity, my man? All right, let's talk about something on the positive. I'm kidding. I do want to get to a slightly more positive
spicy
topic.
Bad.
He went there. He did that.
The All-Star voting opened this week for the San Diego Padres. Annie, how are we filling out our Padre All-Star ballot?
You are bringing Jurickson Profar home to where his career started with the Rangers.
Yep.
And you are also bringing Robert Suarez to the All-Star game.
What about Fernando Tatis Jr., Braden? And not because he's having a great season. The NL outfield is absolutely really bad this year.
Yep.
I mean, there are really no numbers. Tatis is actually number one in WAR in right fielders in the outfield right now in
thanks
the National
last
League.
Week.
Okay, nice.
Just thanks again. 4-for-4 last night. And the other names that are up there are not guys that are going to be garnering a lot of national attention. Let me see the other names I wrote down here. We've got Brandon Marsh. He probably should make it. Jacob Young, Blake Perkins. Does anyone even know what teams these guys are on? Jesse Winker is up there.
Winker's up there?
Winker's up there with Tatis. Those are the only guys ahead of Tatis.
Okay.
And Profar are the only ones in WAR ahead of Tatis.
I think with Tatis, when he first came up, I thought, you know, just as a longtime San Diego Padre fan that was used to seeing the token one Padre in the All-Star game, not seeing a lot, I remember going, this is going to be one of those guys that's going to be in the All-Star game every single year, no matter what he does. I think his whole, like, last couple of years, I'm just going to say that, with everything he went through, I think that hurts him on any type of All-Star game in terms of voting, regardless of what his numbers are. I mean, as dumb as it's, I mean, I don't know why, like, Chicago boos the hell out of him for, like, literally no reason. And when you ask them about Sammy Sosa, they go, oh, that's a low blow.
He's a legend.
Yeah, he's a legend, right? So I just think, you know, I think he should be one of those guys that probably should be in the All-Star game every single year because what he does for the game and the show and what he is. But I find it hard to believe that he would be in All-Star games in terms of voting. Now, from the coach's perspective and the way they think, I think he could probably sneak in there as an All-Star, but I agree with Annie. I think it's going to be Profar, and I think it's going to be Robert Suarez. I think Fernando for what he does and for what the All-Star Game is, which is a gigantic show of Major League Baseball, he should be there every single year.
Yeah, I agree with
I'd
that.
Like to see Luis, Tatis there.
Yeah, Luis Arraez.
I
was going to bring up Luis Arraez. I feel, though, growing up, there were many years in which I thought they were deserving Padres who got overlooked for superstars who were having mediocre teams on other seasons because they got more fan balloting. Can it work the other way, where the superstar in the Padres who's having the mediocre season gets to go to the All-Star Game because he's got some name brand recognition and would just add to the festivities to be there? How about Luis Arraez, though? If you're talking about players who are up there in war, he's not. He's about 17th among second basemen in war, if you consider him as a second baseman. But Greg, he leads the National League. He leads the major leagues in batting average. Is that
the back-to-back champion?
Is that worthy of being an All-Star?
No Padre will be voted in, so we can just start there. No Padre is going to be voted
Jurickson
in.
Won't even be voted
really?
In.
I don't think so either.
Unless the Rangers fans just
name recognition. I think Profar is a lock to
Acuna,
be voted by the
Acuna
players.
Will be voted in, but won't start. Obviously,
I would love to
probably.
See Luis Arraez at an All-Star game.
I would too.
Yeah, I think. Arraez, I think, is going to come down to a coach's decision, to be very honest. The way I see it is Profar is going to be voted in by his players because he's got a lot of popularity in the league and he's having his career year. I don't think the fans of the world or of the baseball world are going to vote any of our players in. Suarez is a lock to be picked by the manager, absolute lock. And then beyond that, it comes down to who's hot in June, which leads me to your point. I think if Tatis has the hot June that he is already off to and he carries that 3 weeks, he'll carry himself right into the Midsummer's Classic.
Chris, do you think Luis Arraez belongs at the All-Star Game?
I'd love to see him there, but I'm one of the few, the proud, that likes to see a guy get a base hit to left field once in a while. I just think this guy's magical with the bat. I love to watch him, so... You know, I think the leading hitter in baseball should be in the All-Star game.
Every year.
And I really don't care who the leading war guy is in baseball, and you'll never get me to come around to that statistic. So I know that he's 17th in war, but I know what my eyes see.
He's number one in your heart.
Yeah, he's one of the best hitters I've seen since, you know, Tony's dad. I want him in the All-Star game. I think those are the three. I don't really care if Fernando makes it or not. Just assume leave him out of the All-Star game to motivate him to play a lot better and more dominant in the second half.
So our 97.3 The Fan Padres Roundtable presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. Pizza royalty, just like it says on the box. Annie, you were going to say something?
Just the All-Star game is pretty boring. I mean, bring in the entertaining players.
Yeah. All right.
We should play men's softball.
Let's see. I got a couple of topics left. First of all, I hear a lot of people going, I see the Padres. They don't look like a playoff team to me. But you can't make that statement in a vacuum. Being a playoff team is meaning you're compared to the other teams. As Craig said, they're close to fourth. They're close to 11th right now. But the National League clearly is not as good maybe as we thought it would be. It could change still. But my question now to all of you is, what do we think that number is going to be now at the end of the season? What's the win total that gets you into the postseason, gets you at least the sixth seed? Usually you think it's going to be around 86. Last year it was 84 for the Arizona Diamondbacks, who ended up going to the World Series. And quite frankly, the National League isn't even as good as it was last year. Chris, what's the number now, the target at the end of the season to get into the playoffs?
81. I don't know. Can we get six 500 teams in the National League? I mean, we don't have that now, I don't think. I'd go 85 to be comfortable. I mean, I hate to sweat it out on the final day, so give me at least 85. And that's only 8 games over 500, which seems a whole lot farther away than I thought it would be.
Nothing has changed. It's 84 or 85. Nothing has changed.
Even with 2 teams at 500 or below currently.
Doesn't matter.
In the
They'll
top
change.
Six
It'll
right
all
now.
Change.
Yeah, I think 83, 84 is probably a safe bet.
I'll go with 84. I think at the trade deadline, teams turn into super teams overnight, and then they go on rolls, and eventually those 500 teams will separate themselves. So just like I thought at the beginning of the season, Padres win 84 games, get the sixth seed. I still think it's the same.
Those were all great points, but I'll go with my original, what was like 82, 83.
I think it's down a little from what we thought. I thought 85 at the beginning of the year.
I hear 79 anywhere in the room.
You might get a losing season in.
With three wild card teams, it will happen.
It will happen.
At some point.
Right. Yeah, but it's going to be the outlier. Once every 15 years, it'll happen.
Yeah.
This might be
the outlier.
It's trending toward perhaps being the outlier.
Just in the NL, Ben, who looks like a playoff team?
I don't know.
The Phillies do. They look like a playoff team.
The Phillies.
The Dodgers do not look like a playoff team right now. Their record is better.
And the Brewers just got swept by the Phillies.
They got shelled last night.
The Phillies have separated themselves from everybody.
They're 12-12, and the Dodgers are 12-12 in their last 24. That does not scream playoff team.
The Braves have huge injury issues.
Huge holes.
And they haven't played great. The Cubs got back to 500, but they did it at the expense of the worst team in baseball, the White Sox, last
You can do
days.
That? You can do that?
You can beat the worst team.
I thought that you lost to those teams.
Even the Padres.
Way to go, Ben.
The Padres swept the White Sox last year. The Diamondbacks, they have yet to hit any sort of stride.
Well,
Jordan Montgomery came back.
Today, buddy.
Yeah. He was terrible yesterday. Right.
One of those two teams still has another gear in them.
The Giants.
Yeah, one of those two teams still has another gear.
100%. Both decimated by injuries, right. Both of those teams. And they're still hanging around.
It's hard to undecimate
yourself. But aren't the Padres decimated by injuries right now?
Yes. I don't know if it's as bad as...
If Machado joins Darvish and Musgrove, that's three of your...
And Bogaerts.
That's four of your top five paid players right there. All gone.
And they're hanging around. Decimated
at the moment. In mind, just because a player is on the field does not mean that he's not injured as well. Luis Arraez, had hits. He still gets hits. He didn't look right the last couple of days. He was wincing on swings. I mean, how long will that last? If Manny's in the lineup tonight, he was in the lineup for a month in 2022 without being himself because he was playing through an ankle injury. They had no business playing through. Do we trust that Manny is going to do the responsible thing? And if he needed to sit out for a week or 2 weeks, he's going to do it? I don't. I expect him to probably talk his way into the lineup tonight, whether he really should be there or not, Annie.
I agree, but like Manny, he's already dealing with an elbow thing. And now if you want to add a hip flexor to it, Manny, you sit, you get healthy, you get well, and you come in and you mash when you come back.
And then Manny looks around at the training table and goes, I got to play. Because he looked at everybody else that's on the training table, too, and he's like, I got to play.
Yep.
That's why I think that's why he's in the lineup tonight.
He'll be doing everything he can to get back on the field.
All right, 100%.
For sure. But I don't know.
It's what he always does.
It's what he's always done. Yeah.
It's what he's always does and what he's going to do.
And when it works, it's inspirational. He holds his own, and having him out there kind of lifts up everybody else.
You know what? I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I think that's how Manny shows his leadership.
And I
don't think he does it in the ways that classically are exhibited by a leader, but I think the way he does it is by posting up.
I thought the moment the other night was pretty solid.
When he walked out to Adam Major in the second inning after a walk and a ball, and he goes, slow down, kid.
You're right, man.
He came out there. I don't know what he said, but he absolutely took a step forward in my mind going, Manny does get his responsibility to the rest of this team.
And we've lost four in a row and got swept by the Angels and swept by the Rockies. So, there's a water's edge to all of this. But I think the point you were driving at is that Manny's going to play because that's what Manny does. He shows up to play.
All right, seventh inning stretch time. Woods already answered this question because we did a little tease during our show. Gambling has been in the news this week in Major League Baseball, but I'm not going to ask you about Tucapita Marcano. I want to know, Annie, what is your lucky number and why did you choose your lucky number?
Oh, I'm going to go with nine.
Nine.
And their story's not for air.
Oh, God. My mind is racing.
That'll be for a podcast down the road.
Holy nine.
Cow. Wow.
And no comments.
Wow. My mind is racing, Annie.
Time to fire up the Ben and Woods podcast again.
Don't give Adam any more ideas.
I didn't hear that this morning. Round table
after dark. We may need a whole another hour for the NSFW content.
What could it be?
Here. Braden, you got a lucky number
story? I hope it's not what I think it is, Annie.
You'll never know.
Or she's totally making it up just to make you
we have to do a podcast, I guess.
My lucky number, a number that I had was 27. When I was playing youth sports, I mean, that was never like a number that came around. Yeah. And so like I kept, I had a different number at Pop Warner every year. And then in high school, I had 28. And then for some reason, my sophomore year, they didn't have 28. And they're like, here's 27. And I just stuck with it ever since. I wore it all the way through high school. Any type of jersey that I get, I wear 27. My brother ended up wearing the same number, which I thought was cool. We got to wear the same jersey at Cathedral. So that's my number, my brother's number, and a lot of people in my family have adopted the 27. So that's mine.
Chris, lucky number? Do you believe in such things?
Not really, but...
Shocker.
Anybody surprised?
But 22 is my wedding date and my birth date, so I'll go with that. But beyond that, yeah, I have nothing.
What number did you wear at San Diego State? Four different ones?
Whatever they handed him.
Whatever,
that's,
yeah.
That's right.
That's a good question.
You don't remember.
He doesn't remember. It's
56. I don't know. I was like the 19th guy on a 17-man pitching staff.
Guys like Chris, like, have no, don't care about the number. Kids now, like, oh, coach, yeah. They fight over jerseys. Oh, it's insane.
Craig?
Look, I heard your guys' segment, so I'm gonna lie and say 31 because it's a prime number, and I like that because I'm not gonna say seven. So
seven, yeah, I said seven. That was the,
yeah, yeah. The lucky because you told me you'd judge me.
Judgy.
You ju-
What's
oh,
wrong with seven?
Oh, seven. It's too normal.
It's a give up.
Common.
Yeah, it's a give up.
It's not unique. Everyone
also, like 21. You think 21 is that too?
20. I think 22. 23 was the hot one when I was a kid. Everyone wanted, yeah, you know, Jordan, and
you should have just made up a story about number nine.
I don't really even have a lucky number. I just like the number.
Mine's 47. I told the story about my college and how it's just like the weird number at Pomona College, and you'll actually see it in movies and TV shows because we have a lot of writers who then, like, sneak it into their scripts for no reason at all, just because they went to school there. And
look,
I always
what time it is.
There's 10:47 after the hour.
The seventh inning stretch.
Wow. Does anybody use their numbers? I'll put them in a lotto ticket every once in a while. Yeah. Roulette table.
My passwords.
Use their?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I get a little.
We know how to hack woods now.
Yes, you do.
It's a little bit more confident when you get like a number nine. Back or like a table number or something like that. It's like, 27. Yes. You get a little excited.
My lucky day.
Good luck.
I love golf nine.
Nine.
I shot a 22 on the eighth hole the other day. So.
Couple of snowmen.
All right, we got about 10 minutes left here, a little bit less. The Padres, in conjunction with the 20th anniversary of Petco Park, are counting down the top 20 moments at the ballpark. So I want, and this is a draft style, so you can't give the same answer as anyone else. Favorite game or moment that you have attended in person at Petco Park in the last 20 years? Annie?
Easy. When Dragon Slayer, Jake Cronenworth,
perfect.
Dodgers. You all know.
That one's off the board now. So I knew that would be a popular one. So, Braden, you have to choose something else.
I'm going to go with, and I have very small memory of it, but I remember being at the first game at Petco Park, both the one that Brock Ungridge played in with the Aztecs and Tony Gwynn, but also the one that the Point Loma coach, David Wells.
David Wells.
Throughout, I was a kid, and we had season tickets. My dad got season tickets that year. We're at a different spot. I remember the first pitch where all the lights, everybody had their cameras out, and everything flashed on that first pitch, and you'll never see that ever again because everybody's got their phones. So that, to me, will be the being at the first game at Petco Park that they walked out.
It was
out
a hell of a game,
Wells.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
The Giants, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Back in was
Sean Burroughs with the late Sean Burroughs with the walk-off hit for the Padres in the first game. What's your Petco Park fondest memory, best moment?
Probably losing to the Dodgers 16-0, but it was my first baseball game I ever went to with my wife, Hannah.
Amazing.
And I think, wasn't it opening day?
It was
one of our first dates.
Was Matt Kemp on that team?
Yep, Matt Kemp was on that team. Well, you know,
you guys can tough questions.
You guys,
they did.
Yeah, you got shut out the whole series. But we went.
Is that
on,
right?
Yes, the first whole games of the season.
The opening on the Rockies series. In
yeah,
but it was the first baseball game I ever went to with my wife. So that's
what I always say.
She's listening right now. By the way,
new Padres fans in the last 5 or 6 years, and there are a lot of them. Have no idea how bad things used to be. That they could get shut out for an entire series to start the season by the Dodgers.
They hammered Colorado after that.
Craig, what's your favorite Petco Park moment?
Interesting draft picks there. I'm kind of mulling it. I'm just going to go with something that came to mind when you said it, which was first walk-off homer in Petco Park history, same year, 2004. You might remember this. Ryan Klesko off Arizona's Matt Manti, and it went right toward the pro shop down there. It just hooked over the left field fence and hit off of the brick wall there of the Western Metal Supply Company ground floor. And that was the first ever walk-off homer. It was Klesko Oppo Taco down the line.
I remember how excited everyone was to see a home run actually go into the Western Metal building.
Cool.
After years of, they're going to incorporate this building. It's going to be the foul pole. You're going to be able to sit in the balconies and watch the the game and we're thinking, oh, this is going to be one of the greatest features in ballpark history, that you can hit a home run into a building.
Right, yeah.
It's still pretty cool 20 years later.
Yeah, have you ever actually sat there for a game?
Yeah. I did. Yeah, yes, earlier this year, I actually got to sit in one of the suites for a while and be out there. It's pretty fun.
Fancy, Ben.
Are you going to select one of these?
I am.
Okay, then
I don't take mine.
I was going to take two since everybody else is done, but I'll leave just in case.
Snake draft.
I think this is easy. It's first thing that came to mind, and I think it's the loudest the ballpark ever was, even louder than Cronenworth's hit against the Dodgers. And that was Brandon Drury's grand slam on Juan Soto opening day.
I was there. It was amazing.
That was unbelievable.
So rad.
I mean, people thought we were never going to lose another game.
Never.
It came in the first inning of the first game.
Didn't we lose the next game?
I was sidelined.
Yeah, they did. I'm not saying what happened after. I'm just saying at that moment, Braden.
That place was.
I remember that.
It was amazing.
Insane.
Yeah, I had a few different choices. The one I settled on is probably pretty selfish, actually, but because almost no one else was there. But getting to have a media pass and be there for the Game 3 win over the St. Louis Cardinals, where they had the two homers by Tatis and two by Will Myers to clinch an actual playoff series victory at home. And it was empty in there.
Yep.
But I got to be in there, sitting in the press box, covering it.
And in the stands, your cutout.
And my cutout was there during the season as well.
Sitting next to my cutout.
Well, the reopening day where you had the full attendance was pretty cool.
Incredible.
So, awesome.
I thought he was going to get drafted. Yeah.
Is that the Cincinnati Reds?
Yeah, against the Reds.
Oh, that was a great
I did the post-game show after the third game win over the Cardinals from my house.
Yes.
Because we weren't allowed to come into the studio or be anywhere else.
Did a pre- and post-game show for a playoff game at my house.
Really weird.
It's funny. For a franchise that has not been blessed with championships or even that many playoff runs or even winning seasons, it sure feels like we have a lot of really great moments to celebrate.
I don't know. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We have 6 in 20 years. That's good. It's good.
Christian Villanueva 3 home runs is kind of sick. That was fun.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's, from Tony Gwynn growing up, it was always for me more about the individual things I saw on the field than ever hoping my team might win, because it never felt like it was that much of a possibility growing up. So I just cheer for the moments. Yeah. And, if I got to see Tony get 3 hits at a game, I was pretty happy leaving that night at Jack
Seth
Murphy
Smith
Stadium.
Bomb on opening night off the bench to beat the Dodgers, be in first place. That was fun.
All right.
Craig's looking very skeptical.
Some Mark Loretta 3-hit games. Yeah, I mean, we can go down the list.
Alexi Amarista, just doing something.
Jerry Hairston Jr. cracked that double in 2010, clearing the bases.
Houston Street
Chase
save.
Headley, that big home run he would have every once in a while.
Melvin Upton Jr. against the Yankees, walk-off 2016.
Remember that one month when Chase Headley was amazing? That was cool.
That was pretty cool, too.
Will Myers getting pegged by his brother in the home run derby.
I was there watching Giancarlo in the home run derby. Oh, my God.
He continued that the other day.
It was unreal.
When he came back.
Oh, all right. We're down to the last minute or two here. All right. Arizona Diamondbacks, Arizona Diamondbacks and Oakland A's.
Yes.
Oakland A's.
Bring your A game homestand.
That's
the Padres.
A good ball club over that.
For everybody involved.
I mean, the last time the Padres lost 5 in a row, they lost 4 in a row now. They came back, won 4 straight, and won 8 of their next 11 series. So has happened.
That's a streak we're still involved in.
That's right.
It's only what I expected.
18 and 16, 8 of 11 series.
Can they turn it on a dime tonight?
They can. They also can go into 11th or 12th place, which Greg, pointed out.
We're out of time. We'll be back next week. Thanks for joining us on our San Diego Padres Roundtable, presented by Roundtable Pizza. So long, everybody.
Gwynn and Chris on the Fan.
The boys are back in town. Boys are back in town. The boys are back. Yeah, the Padres are back in town. We'll break it all down and a roundtable recap.
Listen to
this episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And they're hanging around. Decimated still.
Keep in mind, just because a player is on the field does not mean that he's not injured as well. Luis Arraez, you know, had hits. He still gets hits. He didn't look right the last couple of days. He was wincing on swings. I mean, how long will that last? If Manny's in the lineup tonight, he was in the lineup for a month in 2022 without being himself because he was playing through an ankle injury they had no business playing through. Do we trust that Manny is going to do the responsible thing? And if he needed to sit out for a week or 2 weeks, he's going to do it? I don't. I expect him to probably talk his way into the lineup tonight, whether he really should be there or not, Annie.
I agree, but like Manny, he's already dealing with an elbow thing. And and now if you want to add a hip flexor to it, like I'm like, Manny, you sit, you get healthy, you get well, and you come in and you mash when you come back.
And then Manny looks around at the training table and goes, I got to play.
I got to play.
Because he looked at everybody else that's on the training table too, and he's like, I got to play.
Yep.
That's why I think that's going to – I think that's why he's in the lineup tonight.
He'll be doing everything he can to get back on the field.
All right, 100%.
For sure. But I don't know.
It's what he always does.
It's what he's always done. Yeah.
It's what he's always does and what he's going to do.
And when it works, it's inspirational. He holds his own, and having him out there kind of lifts up everybody else.
You know what? I've said this before, and I'll say it again. I think that's how Manny shows his leadership.
And I
don't think he does it in the ways that – classically are exhibited by a leader, but I think the way he does it is by posting up.
Oh, I thought the moment the other night was pretty solid.
When he walked out to Adam Major in the second inning,
you know,
after a walk and a ball, and he goes, slow down, kid.
You're right,
he came out, I don't know what he said, but he absolutely took a step forward in my mind going, Manny does get his responsibility to the rest of this team.
And we've lost four in a row and got swept by the Angels and swept by the Rockies. So, you know, there's a water's edge to all of this. But I think the point you were driving at is that Manny's going to play because that's what Manny does. He shows up to play.
All right, seventh inning stretch time. Woods already answered this question because we did a little tease during our show. Gambling has been in the news this week in Major League Baseball, but I'm not going to ask you about Tucapita Marcano. I want to know, Annie, what is your lucky number and why did you choose your lucky number?
Oh, well, I'm going to go with nine.
Nine.
And their story's not for air.
Oh, so, God. My mind is racing.
That'll be for a podcast down the road.
Nine.
Wow. And
no comments.
Wow. My mind is racing, Annie.
Time to fire up the Ben and Woods podcast again.
Don't give
Adam any more ideas. I didn't hear that this morning.
The round table after dark. We may need a whole another hour for the NSFW content.
What could it be?
Here, Braden, you got a lucky number
story? I hope it's not what I think it is, Annie.
You'll never know.
Or she's totally making it up just to make you
squirm. We have to do a podcast, I guess.
My lucky number, a number that I had was 27. You know, when I was playing youth sports, I mean, that was never like a number that came around. Yeah. And so like I kept, you know, I had a different number at Pop Warner every year. And then in high school, I had 28. And then for some reason, my sophomore year, they didn't have 28. And they're like, here's 27. And I just stuck with it ever since. I wore it all the way through high school. Any type of jersey that I get, I wear 27. My brother ended up wearing the same number, which I thought was cool. We got to wear the same jersey at Cathedral. So that's my number, my brother's number, and a lot of people in my family have adopted the 27. So that's mine.
Chris, lucky number? Do you believe in such things?
Not really, but
shocker.
Anybody surprised?
But 22 is my wedding date and my birth date, so I'll go with that. But beyond that, I have nothing.
What number did you wear at San Diego State? Four different ones?
Whatever they handed him.
Whatever,
that's right.
That's a good question.
You don't remember.
He doesn't remember. It's
56? I don't know. I was like the 19th guy on a 17-man pitching staff.
Guys like Chris don't care about the number. Kids now, they fight over jerseys.
Oh, yeah.
It's insane.
Craig?
Look, I heard your guys' segment, so I'm gonna lie and say 31 because it's a prime number, and I like that because I'm not gonna say seven. So
seven, yeah, I said
seven.
That was
the lucky seven.
Because you told me you'd judge me.
Judgy.
What's wrong with seven?
It's
a give up.
It's
not unique. Everyone
also, like 21. Do you think 21 is that too?
I think 22. 23 was the hot one when I was a kid. Everyone wanted,
Michael Jordan.
Jordan, and
you should have just made up a story about number nine.
I don't don't really even have a lucky number. I just like the number.
Mine's 47. I told the story about my college and how it's just like the weird number at Pomona College, and you'll actually see it in movies and TV shows because we have a lot of writers who then like sneak it into their scripts for no reason at all, just because they went to school there. And I
look
always
what time it is.
10:47 after
cool.
the hour.
The seventh inning stretch.
Wow. Does anybody use their numbers? I'll put them in a lotto ticket every once in a while. Yeah. Roulette table.
My passwords.
Their...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I get a little.
We know how to hack woods now.
Yes, you do.
It's a little bit more confident when you get like a number nine. Back or like a table number or something like that. It's 27. Yes. You get a little excited.
My
no,
lucky
it's
day.
Good luck.
I love golf 9.
Nine.
I shot a 22 on the eighth hole the other day. So.
Couple of snowmen.
All right, we got about 10 minutes left here, a little bit less. The Padres, in conjunction with the 20th anniversary of Petco Park, are counting down the top 20 moments at the ballpark. So I want, and this is a draft style, so you can't give the same answer as anyone else. Favorite game or moment that you have attended in person at Petco Park in the last 20 years? Annie?
Easy. When Dragon Slayer, Jake Cronenworth,
perfect.
Dodgers. You all know.
That one's off the board now. So I knew that would be a popular one. So, Braden, you have to choose something else.
I'm going to go with, and I have very small memory of it, but I remember being at the first game at Petco Park, both the one that Brock Ungridge played in with the Aztecs and Tony Gwynn, but also the one that Point Loma coach. David Wells.
David Wells.
Throughout, I was a kid, and we had season tickets. My dad got season tickets that year. We're at a different spot. I remember the first pitch where all the lights, everybody had their cameras out, and everything flashed on that first pitch, and you'll never see that ever again because everybody's got their phones. So that, to me, will be the being at the first game at Petco Park that they walked
out. It was
a
hell of a game,
Wells.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
The Giants, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Back in
Sean Burroughs with the late Sean Burroughs with the walk-off hit for the Padres in the first game. What's your Petco Park fondest memory, best moment?
Probably losing to the Dodgers 16-0, but it was my first baseball game I ever went to with my wife, Hannah.
Amazing.
And I think, wasn't it opening day?
It was
one of our first dates.
Was Matt Kemp on that team?
Yep, Matt Kemp was on
that's
that
team. Thought.
Well, you know,
they
guys
actually got shut out.
You guys,
they did.
Yeah, they got shut out the whole series. But we went.
Is that
on,
right?
Yes, the first whole series of the season.
They pulled 10 on the Rockies
series.
In Colorado.
Yeah.
But it was one of my. It was the first baseball game I ever went to with my wife. So that's
so
what
I always
I'm
say to
pick.
New.
Like, she's listening right now. By the way,
new Padres fans in the last 5 or 6 years, and there are a lot of them. Have no idea how bad things used to be. That they could get shut out entire series to start the season by
they
the Dodgers.
They hammered Colorado after that.
Craig, what's your favorite Petco Park moment?
You know, interesting draft picks there. I'm kind of mulling it. I'm just going to go with something that came to mind when you said it, which was first walk-off homer in Petco Park history, same year, 2004. You might remember this. Ryan Klesko off Arizona's Matt Manti, and it went right toward the pro shop down there. It just hooked over the left field fence and hit off of the brick wall there of the Western Metal Supply Company ground floor. And that was the first ever walk-off homer. It was Klesko Oppo Taco down the line.
I remember how excited everyone was to see a home run actually go into the Western Metal building after years of they're going to incorporate this building. It's going to be the foul pole. You're going to be able to sit in the balconies and watch the game when we're thinking, oh, this is going to be one of the greatest features in ballpark history, that you can hit a home run into a building.
Right, yeah.
It's still pretty cool 20 years
cool.
later.
Have
it's
you
awesome.
Ever actually sat there for a game?
Yeah. I did. Yeah, yes, awesome. Earlier this year, I actually got to sit in one of the suites for a while and be out there. It's pretty fun.
Fancy, Ben.
Are you going to select one of these?
I am.
Okay, then
so
I won't.
Don't take mine.
I was going to take two since everybody else is done, but I'll leave just in case.
Snake draft.
I think this is easy. It's first thing that came to mind, and I think it's the loudest the ballpark ever was, even louder than Cronenworth's hit against the Dodgers, and that was Brandon Drury's grand slam on
amazing.
Juan Soto
that
opening
great.
Day.
I was there. It was
that.
Amazing.
That was unbelievable.
So rad.
I mean, people thought we were never going to lose another game.
Never.
It came in the first inning of the first game.
Didn't we lose the next game?
I was a sideline.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
I'm not saying what happened after.
I'm just saying
at that moment, Braden.
That place was.
I remember that.
It was amazing.
Up for grabs.
Insane.
Yeah, I had a few different choices. The one I settled on is probably pretty selfish, actually, but because almost no one else was there, but getting to have a media pass and be there for the Game 3 win over the St. Louis Cardinals, where they had the two homers by Tatis and two by Will Myers to clinch an actual playoff series victory at home, and it was empty in there.
Yeah.
But I got to be in there, sitting in the press box, covering it.
And in the stands, your cutout.
And my cutout was there during the season as well.
Sitting next to my cutout.
Well, the reopening day where you had the full attendance was pretty cool.
Incredible.
I
thought he was going to get drafted. Yeah.
Caratini,
is that the Cincinnati Reds?
Yeah, against the Reds. Yeah.
Oh, that was a great
I did the post-game show after the third game win over the Cardinals from my house.
Yes.
Because we weren't allowed to come into the studio or be anywhere else.
Did a pre- and post-game show for a playoff game at my house.
Really weird.
It's funny. For a franchise that has not been blessed with championships or even that many playoff runs or even winning seasons, it sure feels like we have a lot of really great moments to celebrate.
I don't know. I don't know. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We have 6 in 20 years. That's good. It's good.
And the Christian Villanueva 3 home runs is kind of sick. That was fun.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's, from Tony Gwynn growing up, it was always for me more about the individual things I saw on the field than ever hoping my team might win, because it never felt like it was that much of a possibility growing up. So I just cheer for the moments. Yeah. And, if I got to see Tony get 3 hits at a game, I was pretty happy leaving
happy
that night at Jack
Seth
Murphy
Smith
Stadium.
Bomb on opening night off the bench to beat the Dodgers, be in first place. That was fun.
All right.
Craig's looking very skeptical.
Some Mark Loretta 3-hit games. Yeah, I mean, we can go down the list.
Alexia Marista just doing something.
Jerry Hairston Jr. cracked that double in 2010, clearing the bases.
Houston Street
Chase
save.
Headley, that big home run he would have every once in a while.
Melvin Upton Jr. against the Yankees, walk-off 2016.
Remember that 1 month when Chase Headley was amazing? That was cool.
That was pretty cool, too.
Will Myers getting pegged by his brother in the home run derby.
I was there watching Giancarlo in the home run derby. Oh, my God.
He continued that the other day.
It was unreal.
When he came back.
Oh, all right. We're down to the last minute or two here. All right. Arizona Diamondbacks, Arizona Diamondbacks and Oakland A's.
Yes.
Oakland A's.
The, bring your A game homestand.
Man,
is
that's
the Padres.
A good ball club over in that
for
area.
Everybody involved.
I mean, the last time the Padres lost 5 in a row, they lost 4 in a row now. They came back, won 4 straight, and won 8 of their next 11 series. So it has happened.
That's a streak we're still involved in.
I mean, that's right.
It's only what I expect
18
to happen.
And 16, 8 of 11 series.
Can they turn it on a dime tonight?
They can. They also can go into 11th or 12th place, which Greg, pointed out.
We're out of time. We'll be back next week. Thanks for joining us on our San Diego Padres Roundtable, presented by Roundtable Pizza. So long, everybody.
Gwynn and Chris on the Fan.
The boys are back in town. Boys are back in town. The boys are back. Yeah, the Padres are back in town. We'll break it all down and a roundtable recap.
Listen to
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.